By the spring of 1973, despite rising inflation and deepening political polarization, Allende thwarted calls for impeachment. A failed coup attempt followed in June that was put down by General Carlos Prats. He resigned 2 months later, however, after opposition pressure, and General Augusto Pinochet was appointed in his place. Conspiring military leaders secured his participation in the coup plot just 48 hours before September 11, 1973. The First Lady of Chile, Hortensia Buce de Allende, recalls what happened on that fateful day of the military overthrow in a December 1, 1973 interview with KPFK's Victor Vázquez.
Reports say that Mr. Allende called you when the military had surrounded him in La Moneda. Would you please describe that situation according to the way that you saw it? And would you also tell us what were Dr. Allende's last words to you?
Como es de todos sabido, está en el conocimiento de todos los auditores.
As the listeners should well know, since the 11th of September, Chile has been governed by a fascist military junta that has finished with our democratic regime. They have put an end to a government that was legitimately elected by the people through a popular vote. On the morning of September the 11th, he phoned me early, before the seizure, at 7:45 a.m. exactly. He phoned to tell me that there was a military uprising in Valparaiso and that there had been diverse situations in Santiago and that the situation was very, very difficult. He told me to go to Tomás Moro, our residence, to conserve my peace so that I would not get upset. He thought that there would be a bombardment of our residence, as he thought La Moneda also would be bombarded. In this manner, he also thought that in a little while our daughters and grandchildren were going to join me in Tomás Moro. But fortunately, they did not go. Instead, they directed themselves to La Moneda, because in reality, it would have been terrible if they had been exposed to all the scenes he lived through.
Porque en realidad habría sido tremendo que hubieran presenciado todas las escenas que nos tocó vivir.
Dr. José Quiorga, a personal physician and cardiologist for President Salvador Allende, was present at La Moneda Presidential Palace on the morning of September the 11th, 1973. As coup forces bomb La Moneda, Dr. Quiorga reflects on the events of that fateful day.
I remember I went to my hospital house every day, and when I put the radio in the car, I knew that there was a military coup. And then when I arrived to the hospital, I have a call that they asked me to go to the government palace. And then I walk at that moment, because it was relatively close to the government palace, and I walk. Everybody was going out or downtown, and I was probably the only person going in. And at 10 o'clock, when he called everybody to a salon, a big salon there. And they said that in this moment he's going to ask for a ceasefire, and then everybody has to leave, with the exception of people who are armed and all the people who have some specific function there, especially women, have to leave. But this is the last opportunity, because after that there's not going to be more option. And then everybody has the freedom at that time to leave. And then his relief of any person of this obligation to remain there. And I remember that a lot of people left. And we, the physician, all of us, we remain there. Every people accept now that the Allende really commits suicide. And then, and especially I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw perfectly well. I can, this is fixed in my memory. And then it's not something that you're going to forget. And then I don't have any doubt about that. Basically, at that moment, he ordered to surrender, and everybody was beginning to walk for one stair going to Morandé 80, this one of the door, and the military was still down there. And he, instead of going out, he was coming to us, because we were a few group of physicians or other people. We were the last people. And we, in front of us, there was another salon, independent salon. And he was coming in front of us. And in that moment, he go open the door by himself. And he go inside of the room. And I don't know how long passed, probably 1 minute, something. And then we said, okay, what he doing alone? And then we opened the door. And in the moment they opened the door, I can see him very well, sit down, facing us. He was sit down in a chair, was there. And the only thing I remember after that, that I can recognize him, because there was a lot of smoke at that time, and the woman pala was in fire, and then there was a lot of gas that they were firing against us, and then the environment was terrible. All of us, we were with gas masks, because it was the only way to really breathe inside. And then I saw him facing us, and in a moment, I saw that his face, his head disappeared. And then at that moment, immediately I knew what happened.
News of the coup ignited international condemnation. In Los Angeles, a newly formed Committee for the Restoration of Democracy in Chile held a press conference where a speaker deplored U.S. complicity in the coup, followed by a Chilean political scientist who, though to the right of Allende, denounced the Nazism of the military junta that seized power.
The Committee for the Restoration of Democracy in Chile held a press conference this morning to protest the overthrow of Allende's Popular Unity government by what they termed Nazi elements in the Chilean military backed by U.S. covert assistance. Susan Rabinowitz, a recent visitor in Chile, outlined the demands of the organization.
The demands of this coalition are that no aid is given, no U.S. aid is given to this military junta, and that no recognition is given to this military junta. That in keeping with this, that the U.S. respect the national sovereignty of Chile, that they respect the right of Chile and all of Latin America to determine their own destiny.
As a Chilean, the final speaker was particularly moved by what he saw as the Nazi takeover of his country. Jorge Neff, now teaching political science at the University of California in Santa Barbara, said that while he himself was politically to the right of Allende, the overthrow spelt doom for the future of democracy in Chile.
The so-called president of Chile, Mr. Pinochet, is not a fascist. He's a Nazi. He belonged to the Straight Line Group, which is a Nazi military lodge in the Chilean army. His actual movement called Fatherland and Freedom is a Nazi organization. They were the brown shirts and the whole thing, the whole paraphernalia of Nazism. And that's, I think, the important point we have to look today. It's not a struggle between liberal democracy and communism. It is a struggle between democracy and Nazism, unrelated to the attitude of a detached political scientist. In this case, I cannot be a detached political scientist. I am a Chilean, and I am a human being. And I think in this case, the bell is tolling, and it's calling for all democracies in the world.
Branded as terrorists of an internal war by the junta, democratic participants in the Allende government, such as union leaders, artists, professors, and shantytown dwellers, were subjected to human rights abuses, torture, and disappearances following the coup.
The first thing I can tell you is that I have a friend who is in the stadium. When he walked out on the street, he was immediately detained.
American student Heather Dashner gives her eyewitness reports of goings-on in Chile as she returns from Santiago.
I took his passport to his girlfriend, and his girlfriend, who is a Chilean, took it to the National Defense Ministry, and they, first of all, they would not accept the passport. When she talked to the officer there, it was a military officer, he told her that there were about 12,000 people, foreigners, in the stadium, and that we would be a very high number if 2,000 of them got out alive. In terms of the people who were being detained to be taken to the stadium, there were leaflets being dropped all over the city saying that all foreigners are extremists and it is the population's duty to denounce them as extremists. I have another friend who is an American who was denounced as an extremist. He was a student. He had been there 1 month. And he didn't have any incriminating papers, so all they did to him was take him into the bus and beat him for 3 hours, and then they let him go. They didn't let the rest of the people go who were in the bus, and they carted them away.
What do you think would happen to those people that were carted away?
Well, as people living around the stadium have made repeated reports of continuous machine gun fire, and their fate is rather doubtful. That is, their possibilities of getting out are not the best.
The fifth or sixth day after the Gulf Bay, about 5 or 10 minutes after the lifting of the curfew, there's a loud knock on our door, and I'd say 15 or 20 carabineros busted in. And the first thing they did was they put machine guns in our mouths. They threw us up against the wall and began to beat us, mostly with their fists and with their rifles. After, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or so, they stopped, asked us a few questions, if we had any arms, where were our passports, etc. And we gave them our passports, which are both perfectly valid and in order. At that point, they dragged us out to the hallway of the apartment building, and they threw us down in the hallway. And while some held us down and others held machine guns in our ears, they began to stomp and beat us with their boots and with their rifle butts for a period of on and off up to 3 hours. Meanwhile, I could hear others in the apartment were shooting up the apartment, and apparently when I returned, they stole everything of value that they could steal. After, like I say, about 2 or 3 hours of this beating, they dragged us out to the Carabinero bus and had us spread-eagled on the floor of the bus for a period of time, an hour or so. After which, very surprisingly, they said we could get up, handed us our passports, and said we could go, that we were free to leave. Nobody else in the bus was released. The only thing that I can assume is that of all the prisoners on the bus, I don't know the treatment that any of the others received because there was very little talking on the bus. I can't assume that they received any better treatment than we received. We were North Americans and had North American passports. All the other prisoners on the bus appeared to be Latinos. They were all taken away.
For those who survived torture or made it into exile in order to escape the genesis of what would be a brutal 17-year dictatorship under the rule of General Pinochet, the coup marked a rupture with their homeland. One of the most important Nueva Canción groups, Inti y Jimani, had been touring in Europe when Allende was overthrown. They were not allowed to return to Chile and began traveling the globe performing in resistance to the dictatorship during their exile.
Un programa que representa lo que es la nueva canción chilena, la nueva canción latinoamericana.
Tonight we're going to present a program of songs that represent new Chilean songs, the new movement of Latin American songs and music.
Una canción antigua por sus raíces y nueva por su contenido.
A music that's ancient, but at the same time new in terms of its roots and content.
Una canción que pretende representar a lo que es el hombre latinoamericano de hoy.
A music and song that also tries to represent contemporary Latin American man in today's world.
Cuando un niño muere recién nacido, le ponen un traje blanco y alitas detrás.
When a child, as soon as a child has died,
le ponen un traje blanco y alas detrás.
They put a white smock on him with wings.
Y ellos creen que con esta ceremonia reemplazan el bautismo.
And the people feel that with this ceremony, they, in a sense, replace a baptismal ceremony.
Y que el niño irá al paraíso sin cumplir los trámites de rigor.
And that the child will go to heaven without having to go through the legal paperwork.
El texto dice, cuando se muere la carne, el alma va a una flor o a un pajarito.
The text says that when the body dies, carne, when the flesh dies,
el alma,
the soul
va a una flor.
Turns into a flower.
Esperando su corazón abierto por esas que la está despierto. Cuando se muere la carne, el alma busca su centro en el brillo de una rosa o de un pececito nuevo.
In 1988, General Augusto Pinochet lost a plebiscite on the extension of his rule. A presidential election followed the next year, and the dictatorship formally ended. Families of the disappeared renewed their fight to bring Pinochet and his forces to justice. Thousands were killed in Chile during Pinochet's regime. He was even brazen enough to assassinate people abroad. The most notable example was when a terrorist bombing in Washington, D.C., on September 21, 1976, claimed the life of former Allende Foreign Minister Orlando Letelier and American co-worker Ronnie Moffitt. The assassins belonged to Pinochet's DINA secret police forces. On December 9, 2006, the dictator died without ever being convicted of a single crime, including the murder of Letelier and Moffitt. Orlando's son, Francisco, spoke about his initial reactions to the death of Pinochet and what it meant to him personally as a family member affected by the violence of his dictatorship.
Well, you know, I had prepared for his death after his heart attack. And truly, the main feeling that I have is one that is personal, and I feel also important as a strategy. Because for the last three decades, all the inroads that have been made, the measures of justice that have been reached, and the dismantling of the Pinochet legacy that he would have liked to leave in his death has occurred without ever having brought him to trial and without ever really thinking of Pinochet on trial, convicted of crimes, and then incarcerated as the end goal. This is something that always remained as a strategic plan so that we could clarify our history, create peace, create dignity and justice for all the victims of his regime. The idea that closure will not occur because Pinochet has passed is understandable. And my heart and the heart of my family and of many others goes out to those that feel that they have been robbed of something in Pinochet's death. Closure is a very personal thing. One cannot dictate through law or decree or state action the personal process that a victim of violence goes through to achieve some kind of healing or reconciliation. However, it's important to really, right now, in Pinochet's death, to celebrate the lives which have persevered and that have continued. I, for one, am not one that is not, I'm not celebrating Pinochet's death. I'm celebrating the lives that were given so that we could achieve the possibility that we have today in Chile. I'm celebrating the lives of people like my father, Salvador Allende, and the thousands of people that lost their lives during the Pinochet regime, but also celebrating those whose lives were touched by those deaths and created the conditions so that we could have a woman president like Michelle Bachelet, a victim of Pinochet's regime, whose father was killed like mine, and to have that possibility of creating a nation that is free and that follows along the lines of Salvador Allende's last speech from the Moneda on September 11th, 1973, where he said, sooner or later, the great avenues will open up through which men and women who are free will walk. I was 14 when Pinochet and his collaborators bombed the palace, which ended in Salvador Allende's death and many others. And I heard that speech that morning, and I believed those words. And I believed two things on that day when I heard that speech after my father had left, and you know, we imagined that he had died in the bombing of the palace. I believed Salvador Allende's words. I believed that we were facing a moment of treason, betrayal, and tragedy. And I thought to myself, I am a young person, and I will outlive that dictator. And all the actions that I have taken, and many others that are younger than me and older than me, have been based on the fact that we will continue to create the lives that we imagined we could create during the blossoming of Chilean society and culture, which occurred during the Popular Unity government.
Finalizaremos la primera parte.
We'll finish the first part of the concert
con una canción que Víctor Jara compuso el año 67.
With a song that Víctor Jara composed in 1967.
Antes de que Che Guevara fuera asesinado en Bolivia.
Before Che Guevara was assassinated in Bolivia.
La canción que está dedicada al Che.
The song which is dedicated to Che.
Dice que lo persiguen para matarlo los cuervos con garra de oro.
The song says that Che is being pursued, is being hunted by the wolves with golden fangs.
Abre sendas por los cerros, deja su huella en el viento, el águila le da el vuelo y lo cobija el silencio. Nunca se quejó del frío, nunca se quejó del sueño. El
es rematada por cuervos con garra de oro, como lo ha crucificado la furia del poderoso. Hijo de la rebeldía, lo siguen 20 más 20, porque regala su vida. Ellos le quieren dar muerte.
Córrele, 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 por aquí, por aquí, por allá. Córrele, 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 que te van a matar. Córrele, 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 que te van a matar. Córrele, córrele, córrele.
Hijo de la rebeldía,
hijo de la rebeldía,
lo siguen 20 más
veces.
And that does it for this week's edition of From the Vault. The series is produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres, and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. We're now streaming and podcasting online at fromthevaultradio.org. For more information, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's toll-free, 1-800-735-0230. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the University of California Berkeley's Moffitt Library, the Pacifica Foundation, and from contributions from Pacifica station listeners. This program was written and produced by Gabrielle San Roman. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. I'm Brian DeShazer, and thanks for listening.